May 12th. As we look into the Old Testament today, we'll be reading from 1 Samuel chapter 12, verse 1, through chapter 13, verse 23. And we'll see as we read in 1 Samuel chapter 12 that Samuel's message was the combination of a coronation address, a revival sermon, and a farewell speech. He pointed out the greatness of the people's sin, the entire nation of Israel, in asking for a king, and then called for new dedication. A key theme in the address is witness, as we'll see. What kind of witness? Well, the witness of a godly leader. The people had rejected a proven godly leader for a man who had won only one victory and whose devotion to the Lord was as yet unknown. Samuel was disappointed, but he left office knowing that his conscience was clear. And then there's the witness of history. The hand of the Lord was with them when they obeyed, but it was against them when they rebelled. Verse 14 here emphasizes the same secret of success that God gave to Joshua. Rebellion became King Saul's besetting sin, and it cost him his kingdom. And then there's the witness of the covenant. The people had forsaken God, but he would not forsake them, for he is true to his word. They had the assurance of God's faithfulness as well as the prayers and ministry of Samuel. Had the king maintained his friendship with Samuel and obeyed the word, he would have led the nation to victory. And then as we move on into our reading of 1 Samuel chapter 13, we'll see Saul's second crisis came after he started to build a standing army. And he failed in four ways in this crisis. He failed to act decisively. It was Jonathan, not Saul, who declared war by attacking one of the Philistine garrisons. Saul took the credit and blew the trumpet to rally the people. Now, he failed to inspire the people. That was another failure. Some ran away, some hid, some left the country. You know, people still dodged the military in some ways. Now, those who were faithful were fearful, and the future looked bleak. His third failure was he failed to wait. This was the first step in his rupture with Samuel and his rebellion against the Lord. Patience is a mark of good character. And of course, we see that Saul's character was weak. And finally, he failed to tell the truth. When David sinned, he came with confessions. When Saul sinned, he had only excuses. He lied to his best friend, and it cost him his crown. And Saul would do it again. From that point, his course was all downhill. And with that, let's begin today's reading in the Old Testament. May 12th, the Old Testament. 1 Samuel chapter 12, verse 1, through chapter 13, verse 23. Then Samuel addressed all Israel. I have done as you asked and given you a king. Your king is now your leader. I stand here before you, an old gray-haired man, and my sons serve you. I have served as your leader from the time I was a boy to this very day. Now testify against me in the presence of the Lord and before his anointed one. Whose ox or donkey have I stolen? Have I ever cheated any of you? Have I ever oppressed you? Have I ever taken a bribe and perverted justice? Tell me, and I will make right whatever I have done wrong. No, they replied, you have never cheated or oppressed us, and you have never taken even a single bribe. The Lord and his anointed one are my witnesses today, Samuel declared, that my hands are clean. Yes, he is a witness, they replied. It was the Lord who appointed Moses and Aaron, Samuel continued. He brought your ancestors out of the land of Egypt. Now stand here quietly before the Lord, as I remind you of all the great things the Lord has done for you and your ancestors. When the Israelites were in Egypt and cried out to the Lord, he sent Moses and Aaron to rescue them from Egypt and to bring them into this land. But the people soon forgot about the Lord their God, so he handed them over to Sisera, the commander of Hazor's army, and also to the Philistines, and to the king of Moab, who fought against them. Then they cried to the Lord again and confessed, "We have sinned by turning away from the Lord and worshipping the images of Baal and Ashtoreth. but we will worship you and you alone, if you will rescue us from our enemies. Then the Lord sent Gideon, Bedan, Jephthah, and Samuel to save you, and you lived in safety. But when you were afraid of Nahash, the king of Ammon, you came to me and said that you wanted a king to reign over you, even though the Lord your God was already your king. All right, here is the king you have chosen. You ask for him, and the Lord has granted your request. Now if you fear and worship the Lord and listen to his voice, and if you do not rebel against the Lord's commands, then both you and your king will show that you recognize the Lord as your God. But if you rebel against the Lord's commands and refuse to listen to him, then his hand will be as heavy upon you as it was upon your ancestors. Now stand here and see the great thing the Lord is about to do. You know that it does not rain at this time of the year, during the wheat harvest. I will ask the Lord to send thunder and rain today. Then you will realize how wicked you have been in asking the Lord for a king. So Samuel called to the Lord, and the Lord sent thunder and rain that day. And all the people were terrified of the Lord and of Samuel. Pray to the Lord your God for us, or we will die, they all said to Samuel. For now we have added to our sins by asking for a king. Don't be afraid, Samuel reassured them. You have certainly done wrong, but make sure now that you worship the Lord with all your heart and don't turn your back on him. Don't go back to worshiping worthless idols that cannot help or rescue you. They are totally useless. The Lord will not abandon his people, because that would dishonor his great name. For it has pleased the Lord to make you his very own people. As for me, I will certainly not sin against the Lord by ending my prayers for you, and I will continue to teach you what is good and right. But be sure to fear the Lord and faithfully serve him. Think of all the wonderful things he has done for you. But if you continue to sin, you and your king will be swept away. Saul was 30 years old when he became king, and he reigned for 42 years. Saul selected 3,000 special troops from the army of Israel and sent the rest of the men home. He took 2,000 of the chosen men with him to Michmash and the hill country of Bethel. The other 1,000 went with Saul's son Jonathan to Gibeah in the land of Benjamin. Soon after this, Jonathan attacked and defeated the garrison of Philistines at Geba. The news spread quickly among the Philistines. So Saul blew the ram's horn throughout the land, saying, "Hebrews, hear this, rise up in revolt." All Israel heard the news that Saul had destroyed the Philistine garrison at Geba, and that the Philistines now hated the Israelites more than ever. So the entire Israelite army was summoned to join Saul at Gilgal. The Philistines mustered a mighty army of 3,000 chariots, 6,000 charioteers, and as many warriors as the grains of sand on the seashore. They camped at Michmash, east of Beth Aven. The men of Israel saw what a tight spot they were in, and because they were hard-pressed by the enemy, they tried to hide in caves, thickets, rocks, holes, and cisterns. Some of them crossed the Jordan River and escaped into the land of Gad and Gilead. Meanwhile, Saul stayed at Gilgal, and his men were trembling with fear. Saul waited there 7 days for Samuel, as Samuel had instructed him earlier, but Samuel still didn't come. Saul realized that his troops were rapidly slipping away, so he demanded, "Bring me the burnt offering and the peace offerings." And Saul sacrificed the burnt offering himself. Just as Saul was finishing with the burnt offering, Samuel arrived. Saul went out to meet and welcome him. But Samuel said, "What is this you have done?" Saul replied, "I saw my men scattering from me, and you didn't arrive when you said you would, and the Philistines are at Michmash ready for battle." So I said, "The Philistines are ready to march against us at Gilgal, and I haven't even asked for the Lord's help. So I felt compelled to offer the burnt offering myself before you came." "How foolish!" Samuel exclaimed. You have not kept the command the Lord your God gave you. Had you kept it, the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever. But now your kingdom must end. For the Lord has sought out a man after his own heart. The Lord has already appointed him to be the leader of his people, because you have not kept the Lord's command. Samuel then left Gilgal and went on his way. But the rest of the troops went with Saul to meet the army. They went up from Gilgal to Gibeah in the land of Benjamin. When Saul counted the men who were still with him, he found only 600 were left. Saul and Jonathan and the troops with them were staying at Geba in the land of Benjamin. The Philistines set up their camp at Michmash. 3 raiding parties soon left the camp of the Philistines. One went north toward Ophrah in the land of Sheol. Another went west to Beth-horon. And the third moved toward the border above the valley of Zeboim near the wilderness. There were no blacksmiths in the land of Israel in those days. The Philistines wouldn't allow them for fear they would make swords and spears for the Hebrews. So, whenever the Israelites needed to sharpen their plowshares, picks, axes, or sickles, they had to take them to a Philistine blacksmith. The charges were as follows. 1/4 ounce of silver for sharpening a plowshare or a pick, and 1/8 ounce for sharpening an axe, a sickle, or an ox goad. So, on the day of the battle, none of the people of Israel had a sword or spear, except for Saul and Jonathan. The pass at Michmash had meanwhile been secured by a contingent of the Philistine army. Our reading in the New Testament today takes place in the book of John, chapter 7, verses 1 through 30. And here in John chapter 7, we see how the world thinks. Because he was doing his Father's will, Jesus lived on a divine timetable. And so should we. That's the point. The world does not understand this and will give you advice contrary to God's will. Be on your guard and guard your heart. Live on God's schedule and you'll always have God's help. We'll also see as we read in chapter 7 how the world decides. This discussion reveals the confusion and unbelief of the people. Some were for him because of his miracles, while others opposed him because he broke the Sabbath laws, or supposedly broke the Sabbath laws. Some waited to see what their leaders would do, and their leaders wanted to kill him. They were judging by appearances and going astray. And then we'll see what the world needs. One ritual during the Feast of Tabernacles was the pouring out of water in the temple. It was a reminder that God gave Israel water in the wilderness. Water for drinking pictures the Holy Spirit, who is given to those who trust Christ. The world is thirsty and can find its thirst quenched only by coming to Christ. And with that, let's begin our reading today in the New Testament. May 12th, the New Testament. John chapter 7, verses 1 through 30. After this, Jesus traveled around Galilee. He wanted to stay out of Judea, where the Jewish leaders were plotting his death. But soon, it was time for the Jewish festival of shelters. And Jesus' brothers said to him, "Leave here and go to Judea, where your followers can see your miracles. You can't become famous if you hide like this. If you can do such wonderful things, show yourself to the world." For even his brothers didn't believe in him. Jesus replied, "Now is not the right time for me to go, but you can go any time. The world can't hate you, but it does hate me because I accuse it of doing evil. You go on. I'm not going to this festival because my time has not yet come." After saying these things, Jesus remained in Galilee. But after his brothers left for the festival, Jesus also went, though secretly, staying out of public view. The Jewish leaders tried to find him at the festival and kept asking if anyone had seen him. There was a lot of grumbling about him among the crowds. Some argued, "He's a good man." But others said, "He's nothing but a fraud who deceives the people." But no one had the courage to speak favorably about him in public, for they were afraid of getting in trouble with the Jewish leaders. Then, midway through the festival, Jesus went up to the temple and began to teach. The people were surprised when they heard him. "How does he know so much when he hasn't been trained?" they asked. So Jesus told them, "My message is not my own. It comes from God who sent me. Anyone who wants to do the will of God will know whether my teaching is from God or is merely my own. Those who speak for themselves want glory only for themselves. But a person who seeks to honor the one who sent him speaks truth, not lies. Moses gave you the law, but none of you obeys it. In fact, you are trying to kill me." The crowd replied, "You're demon-possessed. Who's trying to kill you?" Jesus replied, "I did one miracle on the Sabbath, and you were amazed. But you work on the Sabbath too, when you obey Moses' law of circumcision." Actually, this tradition of circumcision began with the patriarchs long before the law of Moses. "For if the correct time for circumcising your son falls on the Sabbath, you go ahead and do it, so as to not break the law of Moses. So, why should you be angry with me for healing a man on the Sabbath? Look beneath the surface so you can judge correctly." Some of the people who lived in Jerusalem started to ask each other, "Isn't this the man they are trying to kill? But here he is, speaking in public, and they say nothing to him. Could our leaders possibly believe that he is the Messiah? But how could he be? For we know where this man comes from. When the Messiah comes, he will simply appear. No one will know where he comes from." While Jesus was teaching in the temple, he called out, "Yes, you know me, and you know where I come from, but I'm not here on my own. The one who sent me is true, and you don't know him. But I know him because I come from him, and he sent me to you." Then the leaders tried to arrest him, but no one laid a hand on him because his time had not yet come. Today we're reading Psalm 108, verses 1 through 13. And in this psalm, David makes three affirmations. He says, "I will praise." A steadfast heart is a singing heart, because confidence in God gives you something to sing about. David arose early in the morning to sing to the Lord. Worship is a very good preparation for warfare. And he says, "I will listen." God heard the voice of David, and then David listened to the voice of God. It was a word of assurance as the king went out to battle. "All nations are mine, and I can do with them as I please." And then David said, "I will conquer." He made that bold statement. He believed in God. God leads us into the battle, helps us capture the enemy's strongholds, and gives us the victory. And verse 13, as we read here in Psalm 108, is David's version of Philippians chapter 4, verse 13. It was true for him, and it is true for you today. And that truth is, I will conquer. Psalm 108, verses 1 through 13. A song, a psalm of David. "My heart is confident in you, O God. No wonder I can sing your praises with all my heart. Wake up, lyre and harp. I will wake the dawn with my song. I will thank you, Lord, among all the people. I will sing your praises among the nations. For your unfailing love is higher than the heavens. Your faithfulness reaches to the clouds. Be exalted, O God, above the highest heavens. May your glory shine over all the earth. Now rescue your beloved people. Answer and save us by your power. God has promised this by his holiness. I will divide up Shechem with joy. I will measure out the valley of Succoth. Gilead is mine, and Manasseh too. Ephraim, my helmet, will produce my warriors, and Judah, my scepter, will produce my kings. But Moab, my wash basin, will become my servant, and I will wipe my feet on Edom and shout in triumph over Philistia. Who will bring me into the fortified city? who will bring me victory over Edom? Have you rejected us, O God? Will you no longer march with our armies? Oh, please help us against our enemies, for all human help is useless. With God's help, we will do mighty things, for He will trample down our foes. Proverbs chapter 15, verse 4. Gentle words are a tree of life. A deceitful tongue crushes the spirit.